Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Gate 7 International Podcast, your official English source for all things Olympiakos FC and Greek football. You are listening to episode 47. This is the first part of a special double feature that we have coming for you today. I am Peter Thompson. This is all you'll be hearing from me today. We have Ali Bulubasis and Kosta Levoyanis on deck, ready to interview Swedish international and Olympiakos player Per Zetterberg. Per is our third player special guest. We are very excited to talk to him. And after this episode, we have another one coming out today with a little bit of post-game for the two most recent Olympiakos games. Enjoy the episode. We will be starting the interview very soon.
And now we have our special guest. It was about a few days of guessing, but everybody did eventually get it when Gustav put the graphic up. We have Per Zetterberg here. Our special guest, Per, thank you so much for joining. It is an honor to have you here and to discuss football with you, as let alone Olympiakos football. Thank you again for joining us. How are you doing tonight?
Hello. Yeah, I'm doing great. Getting older, but I'm doing great. I'm very happy to be here. And I was very happy when you asked me to be part of this show.
Well, we love to get feedback. We love to hear from former players of Olympiakos. The audience loves to hear what you thought when you were playing for Olympiakos, what it felt like to play, especially with your teammates, what the atmosphere felt like. But before we get started with that, we wanted to start off with some background about you. More so, how did you get started playing football?
I started to play football when I was 6 years old in a small team here in Sweden where I'm living now, who played at that time in third division. If you think that Olympiakos is first division, they have second, they have third division. And there I reached the first team of them when I was 15. I played a tournament with national team of the youth in Sweden that you play every year in one of the Nordic countries. And that year it was in Denmark. I did a very good tournament over there, and I was a scout from Anderlecht who was over there. So they asked me to come to their club, Anderlecht, when I was 16. So when I was 16, I went to Anderlecht to play in the youth teams over there. I played 2 years in the youth teams, and when I was 18, I went up to the first team. And that's the start of my career, really. And after that, it went in one direction that I came in the first team when I was 18. I was not a regular playing in the first team, but because of that time, the late 80s, beginning of the 90s, Anderlecht was one of the big teams in Europe. You know, they were always in semifinal, always in the finals of the European Cup. So that was really one of the best teams in Europe at that time. It was very difficult to take a place. So they rented me to Charleroi for 2 years when I was young, because I needed to have some playing experience. So I played there for 2 years. And after that, I came back to Anderlecht where I had a starting place from 93.
I live in Belgium. I've been living in Brussels the last 13 years. I know that you're a legend here, having played 13 years for Anderlecht. I unfortunately never got to see you play here, but I did as an Olympiakos fan. So I'm born in the UK, Olympiakos fan. My family's Greek. Ari is in the States, in Maryland. Okay. So we're four people. One of us is in Canada, one is in the States, one is in Geneva in Switzerland, and I'm in Belgium. So
His status is a little bit amazing by Greek supporters. I mean, in every team there's always supporters everywhere where you're going.
Yep.
That's very amazing, I have to say. If you still go on playing Sweden, you have Greek supporters. Yeah, it is like that. It's, you have Greek people everywhere.
This is true.
Somebody told me that the third biggest city in the world, Greek city, is Melbourne.
Yeah, it's true.
Yes, it's huge.
So, yeah. I mean, there's Greek people everywhere.
This is true. Yeah. This
we is find true. Our way everywhere, that's for sure. Yeah. We're all over the place.
Oh, Per, I have to give you warm regards from Stelios Giannakopoulos.
Yeah, Stelios, yeah.
Who's a good friend, and we had him on the show about a month or two ago. I spoke with him a little bit earlier, and I told him that we're going to be having you on the show today, and he sends you his best warm regards to you and your family.
Yeah, send him my regards also. It's a long time since I talked to him. It's many years ago. It's you can't have contact with everyone.
No, it's, yeah.
It's and also you get older. You know, it's 20 years ago nearly I played over there. We start to get old. my generation starts to get very old.
All of us are starting to get old. Actually, the other two that are not here with us today, I think they're 10 years younger than us, huh? So
they're in their mid-20s. So I just turned 31. They're a few years younger than me. They were really young back then. So they were
They were still in their diapers. I'm 35.
Then you were still young when I was playing there. So you know, time goes quick. It goes very quick.
And it was a lot more difficult to watch the games back then too. I was in middle school or high school, like upper school here, we call it.
Yeah.
And I remember I always used to have to go. My grandfather had the antenna satellite package. Yeah, yeah, so I had to go to his house to watch the games all the time.
Yeah, I remember it because I had the same antenna to have some Swedish TV when I was in Athens.
Yeah.
It was exactly the same, and it was so difficult with everything, and even with the computer and internet was a big problem.
DSL? No, it's not like today, man.
I was just, not at all.
With a wired modem connection, my God.
Yeah, it's so easy. You can watch everything now if you want to do it.
I tell you what, funny story. The 3-0 Rizupoli game.
Yeah.
Our satellite was broken. And I had to find a dodgy site, and I watched it in my small bedroom in London with my father and one of my father's friends, and the bit frame was all, you know, just crap, and you know that game was crazy, wasn't it? With all the confetti at the beginning and all the atmosphere around it was.
It was, I think, was one of the hysterical game I ever played, because you played in Rizupoli, and you know it takes 20,000 people.
Yeah.
And we heard before the game, because it was decisive of the championship, because Panathinaikos was leading in front of us, and we had to win 2-0 or something, because we lost the first game in Panathinaikos. And there was demands for 200,000 tickets or something before the game. Oof. It was crazy. It was really crazy. And so we were all motivated. My father was on the game, I remember. Wow. And we came to the stadium, and as I told you, it was 20,000 people. I think it was 6,000 or 8,000 policemen on the game.
I believe it.
It was unbelievable, and you know, it was confetti, it was firecrackers, it was everything on it. And I think that the players of Panathinaikos were so impressed by the atmosphere, even in the small stadium, that, you know, we had already won the game before it started. Honestly, I believe so. Even that we did a very good game. That for sure, we win 3-0. It could have been more, but it was a real fantastic game. And if it should have been playing in the big Athens Stadium, then it should be crazy. It should explode everything.
Absolutely.
Per, you played for Anderlecht for, I think, all in all, 13 years, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, many years.
He's 13 years at Anderlecht, and I think it's safe to say you're a legend in Anderlecht. And my question is the following. You've obviously been around Belgian football for such a long time. Did you ever expect the level of the players coming out of Belgium? I mean, looking at the Belgian national team today, did you ever expect the country's football product to explode in these previous years the way it has done?
You know, Belgium had difficulties, you know. They had a very good generation when I was young. When I came there at 16, you know, there were many good players at that time. And then they had some difficult years in the late 90s, beginning of 2000 and things like that. Then it started again. But that it became so good as they are now, I think that that doesn't happen very often if you are not Germany or, you know, Spain or something like that. This is or Holland. But this is a big surprise. But, you know, there's more and more youngsters who's coming up from the Belgian football. One of the reasons I think that the Belgium clubs doesn't have so much money like the big competition has. So they are a little bit obliged to give them the chances. The young Belgian footballer have the chance now to play in the first teams of the Belgium competition. And that's one of the reasons why it's so many of them.
Per, I wanted to ask, you played, as long as I watch, you were always a midfielder. Did you start out as a midfielder or did you grow into that role elsewhere? When did you first know that you were a midfielder or an attacking-oriented midfielder?
I started as a striker, really, when I was young. Yeah, when I was young, I scored a lot of goals. I was very egoist. I always want to score goals, really, since I was young. And one time when I was 11 or something, one of my friends told me that one of the midfielders in our team was injured. So he said, it's better that you go down in the midfield. No, we need you in the midfield. So at the age of 11, I started to play as a midfielder. So offensive midfield as a number 10, if you say like that. And since when I was 11, I've always been playing at that position. And that went on when I was also in Anderlecht, because there you have really, as a number 10, you are the key of the team, really. So everything has to go through you. And that suits my way of playing. I was that kind of a player who needed to have a free role to be the brain behind the team, if you say like that.
Oh, exactly. I agree with you 100%.
That's my way of playing, you know. I was not a defensive player. I couldn't run behind somebody and tackle and things like that. That was not my game. I could score goals and I can give assists. That was my game. It's like a quarterback, really, in American football.
You made the team tick. I never remember you being really an egotistical footballer at all. I just remember you being the guy pulling the strings.
I really love to give assists, sometimes maybe too much instead of scoring goals. That was maybe the problem sometimes, but I love to give a good assist. I had so much fun doing it. I enjoyed so much to see somebody else being happy by scoring a goal and giving a nice assist. I love doing it.
You did, and you had some magical, magical plays behind the defense. I remember quite a few of them. Now, one quick question I had before we continue is, with the way the number 10 has kind of, the number 10 position has kind of evolved in modern football.
Yeah.
What is your opinion on that? How much has that role changed from when you played as a number 10?
It has changed a lot, you know. The former number 10s like myself were doesn't really exist in that way. You know, the number 10 from today is, or they're playing on the side by coming inside the field to try to find a free role, because you don't have the free role, because the game has become so physical, has become so quick, so you can't afford to have a player like me at the time. We're only doing one part of the thing, you know, playing offensively. You can't afford it, so they put them on the side. And also, if you see that the stopper in the team from today's football are really the players who have the most of the ball. If you think like Van Dijk in Liverpool, he's putting the strength everywhere where he is. So he's the playmaker from today's football. So it has changed so much. I don't think that I could have played the same way in today's football like I did 20 years ago. You have to change your way of playing because their football is totally different.
I still think that in the modern game, you could play for sure. There's a player that you played with who, for me, is possibly one of the best footballers I've ever seen live. And that was Giovanni. Don't know if you were, if you guessed I was about to say that. But the things that he did with the football, I'd never seen before. I think the first footballer I fell in love with was Eric Cantona. And ever since I've been an Olympiacos fan, my father took me to a stadium when I was 4 years old. I remember seeing this guy in 99 when he joined us, and the things he did with the football were just, you know, nutmegging three players one after the other and then chipping people from 40 yards. Just unbelievable. He couldn't play in the modern game. Although I have seen some pictures and videos of him working out on Instagram, and I think he looks fitter now than he did when he was playing football. But
yeah, I'm agreeing with you. It's only my way of saying that the way that we were playing at that time is totally different than now. If you know that the physical level and the physical training that they have now and all the programs and all the things that they had should have helped our game also in today's football. But maybe that we had to play in a different way than we did at that time because the football is so much physical and so much quicker than at that time. That doesn't mean that the football is better today than it was before. It's not, that's what I'm saying. But I say that the footballer, the players are physically stronger in today's football than we maybe were at that time. It's the only thing I'm saying.
I don't know how much you follow or watch the team recently, but we have a number 10 in our team, Costas Fortunis. He's been at the club for a while. He's actually a product of our youth academy. He spent some time in Germany before coming back. And now he's really, you know, the guy that makes things tick. And for a lot of years, he was criticized as being physically too weak, mentally too weak, not good enough to be captain, or didn't have the mental capability to be captain. And the last couple of years, he's really come into his own. I don't know if you've watched many of our games or if you have an opinion on him.
I only see, you know, in Champions League and things like that. It's the only thing. And I'm still in contact with Carambeu. He's still on every game. He's sitting on the bench, so he's still a good, very good friend of mine. So I still talk to him. So I know a little bit about what happens in Olympiakos, but I can't say on players because I don't follow it so much. I know that they have a very good team. That they are, I think, 12 points ahead of Ajax or something. Depending what if Ajax win today or yesterday, I don't know. So Olympiakos is still. You know, it's a special thing to play in Olympiacos, especially if you see in today's football, you're going to get criticized if you play bad.
Yes.
It is like that. You play in a big club. You play in the biggest club in Greece, who has supporters everywhere. And they expect always the best of you. And when you don't do it, okay, you're going to get criticized. But I'm sure that every player who plays in Olympiacos has something in themselves to do it. Some will succeed because the pressure is there. Some can't cope with it. That's normal. And then you have the pressure on it. I can only say that he, Fortunas, he, you know, I had difficulties in the beginning with all the pressure that was, you know, it was difficult. I had to say it myself. But when you learn it, you come into it and you understand how the players want to play and how the supporters want you to play and things like that. And when all settles and when you feel yourself at home, then your real you is gonna show it. And he is showing that now. And that, I think, is totally normal from player to player.
I'm not going to lie. When you arrived, it didn't seem like you were struggling when you first came in. It seemed like you were made to play in Greece.
Yeah, in the first couple of months, yeah. The first, we had Matsourakis as a trainer at that time.
Yeah.
And it started very well. And then he was fired because we had some bad results. And he was fired. And then you have to say that Niniadis started to play very well.
Yeah.
He played better than I did. And, you know, then you lose confidence, and that didn't happen in Anderlecht, and there I was sitting on the bench, and that was something that you're not used to do, and you didn't play like you wanted to do, and you lose confidence, and, you know, it worked downhill, if you want to say. And in the end, it was playing better, and I was playing worse, and it was a difficult period. And it was normal that you start to get criticized and things like that. And it was difficult. But I'm happy that I turned that around and that I ended in a good way instead of started in a good way and ended in a bad way. Because then maybe, you know, the supporters and things like that, when I left, they have a good remembering by the way that I was playing. I think so.
I think, obviously we've transitioned into your time at Olympiakos already. And I think I remember you having some difficulties with Lemonis as a coach, or at least maybe when Lemonis came in. I think the second season we had Manchester United in our Champions League group, I remember there was something going on with you, and you didn't seem at your best at the time. I was actually going to ask you, like, how was your transition and how long it took you to fully adjust, and like you said, really get to know the expectations of the club, the pressure, how the team plays, what the fans expect, and the pressure which you talked about already. But before we dive into all of that a little bit more, how did you end up in Greece after so many years at Anderlecht? How did it come about? Was it end of contract at Anderlecht?
No,
you had some offers.
I had many offers when I was there, but you know, Anderlecht has been so many years my home, and I felt really well over there. And then it came the offer from Olympiakos. And that was an offer that I had seen them play the year before in the Champions League and like that, where they did very well. And I heard about the players was coming in, and I was tempted to do it because I was starting to get 30 years old. If I wanted to go somewhere at that time, that was the club was the most interesting for me to go. As me and my wife, we love Greece from before to going on vacation. So we said, it can be a nice adventure to go over there. And it's the biggest club in Greece. So I said, it should be nice to try it out. And I don't regret it. You know, I had three wonderful years, even that I had difficult years, one and a half difficult years. But it ended in a fantastic way. So you forget quickly then the 1.5 years difficulties that you had.
You already discussed a little bit kind of the pressure that you felt when you came to Olympiakos. And I wanted to know if there was kind of a difference in the culture of football when you came to Greece compared to Belgium or Sweden when you initially played. Was there a big difference in the way the culture surrounding football in Greece compared to the other two countries you played in?
Yeah, it's a little bit, you know, I'm the first. If I do a bad pass or anything, if I do a bad shot, I say, sorry, it's my fault. No problem. That's, everyone do mistakes. You know, mistakes is a part of the game. And I was a little bit surprised in that in the beginning, how to react, because Greek people are very proud people, you know, and in the beginning, you know, I still remember it like yesterday, and I still explain this. One of the first games that I was playing, I give a ball. I don't mention any names, because names I don't want to mention, but this is a little bit how Greek people see themselves. There's nothing bad on it. It's no critics, but this is a little bit like this. I give a pass to one of our players. He controlled the ball without anyone next to him. Very good. He controlled them. The field in Waka is perfect, you know, short grass, perfect. He gave a ball to one of the wing players. By the time he gave it too far. So it went out to the stadium. You know, it went too far. He looked to me and blamed that it was a bad pass of me. And I said, fucking hell, me? I gave you a good pass and you give a bad pass and that's my fault. Come on. So I said, okay. They don't like to put the blame on themselves. They always try to put the blame on somebody else. And that's a little bit, and that's a little bit the Greek culture, you know, in the beginning. So you have to get used to it. Yeah. You are laughing.
Because you're absolutely correct. That's why I'm laughing.
So that was a little bit of a surprise for me in the beginning that I start to blame you, even if it's not your mistake. Because I'm used to say, okay, sorry, it's my mistake. It's no problem. Mistakes happen. But that was a big surprise in the beginning. So that's how it is.
You've given us a good one there. I'm having a riddle thinking about who that might have been.
I don't mention anyone.
You talked about the pressure before, and obviously, you know, in Greece at the time there were more sports newspapers than there are today. There's still a lot of sports papers, but there are, you know, less after the crisis hit. But how do you remember your first derby? I mean, this is obviously going back some years now, and I can't remember which one your first derby was, but I remember some really epic games. 3-0 at Rizupoli. I think there was a fantastic game. I think you were involved in Olympiakos AEK at the Olympic Stadium.
4-3
with an Alexandris scissor kick, I think, at the end to win it. I mean, what are your feelings like? Do you get goosebumps? I get goosebumps thinking about these games. Like, what was it like for you?
Those are fantastic, and I still remember those games. You know, those are historical games. There are some games that you still remember. You remember the 6-2 against Leverkusen, who was in the final in the Champions League just the year before. That was one, and you remember 3-0 in Rizupoli. That game I remember the best because that was a historical game. We had to win those game, and with the atmosphere in a small stadium in Rizupoli, and yeah, it was fantastic. And a 4-3 in Waka against a very good AEK at that time. You have Nikolaidis, you had Tsartas, I think, at that time, and had a very good team. So fantastic. But at that time, we had a fantastic team also in Olympiakos. Really, really good players.
You really did. That team was incredible.
Yeah, fantastic players. Djordjevic. Mm-hmm. For me, one of the best players I ever played with. Fantastic. Many good players. You had Karambu, you had Giovanni, you had name it. In every position, you have a good player.
Absolutely.
So it was really a great pleasure to have been playing with those players. And then afterwards, Greece won the European Championship.
Yeah, not too long after that.
So, I mean, we had a quality side. It's really quality side.
I think people forget actually the level of the league back then. The teams were good. Like AEK had a really good team. You mentioned some of their players, like Tsartas, Demis Nikolaidis up front. That was a really good AEK team, and Panathinaikos had a good team as well. Yeah. They had a good team. Maybe the northern teams weren't as good as they are now. Now the northern teams are basically trying to kick us off our mantle.
Yeah, Pauk was okay at that time. Not like they are now, but you know, Panathinaikos and AEK, they went really far in European Cups also. And you know, like I told you, 2004 it was when Greece won it in Portugal. Yeah. So I mean, many of the players were still playing in Greece, in the competition of Greece at that time. So the level of competition, like you were saying, was very high. And at that time, even the supporters from the visitor teams could go on the visitor games. So you had the Olympiakos supporters in Thessaloniki or in AEK games. in Philadelphia, and so it was nice. The level was very good, I have to say, and was fun to play. It was fun to play, honestly.
Hey, I have a personal question to ask you, and you don't have to answer this, but I think this is quite inspiring. And if I'm not mistaken, you have diabetes, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, as a footballer, how did this affect you as a professional?
It's not very common to have diabetes and play professional football. So I had to learn the way that suits me the best. You know, I had to treat myself, what I eat, take the rest when I need to take it, control my body all the time, if my sugar level was high, low, whatever it was. So I had to try to be as professional as I could be, even more maybe than a normal person. But that was my way of living. And I was used to it, to do it in that way. At that time, it was more difficult than it is today, because today it's you have better insulin than at that time. You had you can control it much better today. It's a disease. It's a serious disease, but I don't think that I could have done a career like I did if I didn't have it, because I don't know anything else. I got it when I was 19, so I've done all my career with diabetic.
So that says a lot about who you are, not just as a player, but as a person. And I mean, as a player, we always saw someone who was just 100% professional and gave everything you had. So I think that's inspiring for anybody that might be young and aspiring footballer that could have that condition or something else, that, you know, you need to have that discipline and mindset like you did.
I think I tried to do the best that I could of with my situation, with the disease that I had. I tried to be as respectful that I could be towards my teammates, towards myself, towards the supporters, towards the people who follow us. I tried to be as respectful that I could be. They could. I always tried to have it in my head, even if I was playing the Olympiacos in Anderlecht or whatever I was playing, always to behave myself towards the people, that the people could not say afterwards, Per was an asshole or anything like that. I always tried to be friendly towards the supporters. If it's always a supporter who was saying how bad I was or how good I was or whatever, always try to listen to them and behave, because they have the right to do it, but you can't behave badly, and that I've always tried to do. So I think that that's something that I'm very proud of, that I always had a positive mindset towards the people who tried to talk to me. I never refused to talk to anyone. I always been open to anyone. If it was a Olympiacos supporters or Panathinaikos or Ike or Anderlecht or Bruges or whatever, I always took my time to talk to them. I enjoy it, honestly. I enjoy it a lot.
Per, I wanted to ask you, you briefly brought up a little bit about your diet and eating. We ask every player that comes, because the diaspora Greeks, the Greeks that live outside of Greece, we have a joke about when players come to play in Greece, they go on what we call the souvlaki diet. But we were surprised when we heard from Matt Derbyshire and Stelios Yannakopoulos that actually Olympiacos had a kind of regimen for the players. I don't know the specifics and how strict it was, but more or less watching what you ate, making sure you were eating things that were good for you. What was your experience with that? Compared to the programs that you played for as well, other programs, Anderlecht or in Sweden, what was the dietary focus like for Olympiacos compared to them?
I don't remember so much. You always do weight, you know, you always have to take your weight and things like that. But you are training so much, you eat normally what you have. You have the souvlakis, you have the pita gyros and things like that, tzatziki and feta and things like that. You eat it. The main problem that I maybe had in that case instead because it was so warm over there. So he ate a lot of ice cream because it was too warm. So that was the main problem sometimes, that he ate too much ice cream. You know, that was the main problem, because you don't eat so much French fries and things like that, like you maybe do in the colder countries. So you eat more ice cream, and that can also be a problem.
Chips and mayonnaise in Belgium, and waffles, and in Greece, the old pita gyro from time to time, and your ice cream.
Yeah, it's a little bit different because it depends on the weather. You know, it's the weather. You know, in Sweden, you eat pizza because that's cold over here. So, and in Greece, it's totally different. So you have to get used to it and try to eat what's the best for you, that you can produce what you're there for, to play soccer.
Right. Now, Per, I also wanted to ask, and because you have great insight as a player coming into Greece, what was the communication like? So you just come to Greece, you have all these different players from different nationalities on your team. What was it like to try and communicate with the other players? Was it difficult? Did everybody speak English, or did you have to learn some Greek? What was it like trying to communicate with other players?
Some of the players was very difficult because everyone didn't understand so good the English. One of my best friends was Christo Kondis. He's still one of my best friends. I still talk to him a lot. So, and he is Greek and he speaks very good English, so he can translate sometimes when I was there. So that was, he helped me a lot, I have to say. Great guy. So it was not always easy, but if you have somebody who can translate for you and that you have confidence in, that you can explain your words to him and he translated what it has to be, then it's okay. But you try to surround yourself by people that understand your language. That's why me and Christo Kondis becomes very good friends. Me and C. Elias becomes very good friends because we speak English. And then me and Christian Carambeau, because we speak French. So those are the three most close connections that I had with the players in Olympiacos. Then if you have Giovanni, that is one of your supporters, you know, Giovanni, he speaks Brazilian. Oh, it was more difficult to speak Brazilian with Giovanni. So you have to translate via C. Elias in that case, or you have to try to find some Greek words. And as we were speaking bad Greek, both of us, so it's not always so easy.
I think it's something that we fans kind of take for granted, or we don't really consider when players come in. You have fans that just expect, hey, you come in, you need to be able to play and communicate. But a lot of times, I don't think a lot of fans and even our own audience members, sometimes even us, the podcast hosts, we don't always remember that, hey, you might not be able to communicate. You have to find a way to communicate so that you can get on the same page. That insight from you is very interesting to hear about how you kind of get around that, those language barriers, so that you can communicate with your teammates.
You try to find, you know, people that understand all the language. You know, Christo Kondis could speak English and Greek, so if I wanted to say something to the people who doesn't understand English, you speak to him and he translates to the other ones. If I then now want to speak to the people, you know, like C. Elias, Giovanni, Gabriel Alves was there, you have Luciano at that time, you know, you have people who maybe didn't speak another language than their own. So you have to translate, find people that you can translate to those people. But you get used to it. So you have a way of communication with everyone. And, you know, some of the people you're closer to than others, like a normal work. You know, that's normal. You have to function together. And the most important is that you can function on the field. And we function very well together. We respected each other. There was not many big problems in the team. We have respect for each other, and we did it very well. So that's the most important.
I think this is a super interesting conversation. And, you know, often you read in Greek newspapers that it's okay. They speak the universal language of football and they don't need to communicate. They communicate with their feet. It's not quite that simple, but that's interesting. Yeah, Zay Elias obviously played for Inter Milan, so he had some experience abroad and he spoke some English, but I didn't know he spoke English, but that's...
He speaks a little bit English, and I have still contact with him also. You know, the three people that I have contact with, it's Condis, Christo Condis, Zay Elias and Karambu. Those are the three people that I'm still, after 20 years, have contact with.
Super. I think we can get into some fan questions now. We have we've got quite a few questions that came
in. We do. We have a lot. Bill Clay, who is the first one to guess who the special guest is, he had a question for you. You kind of touched on this a little bit already, but he has a bit of a two-part question. The first part of the question was, when you were in negotiations with Olympiacos and you were first arrived, what was Olympiacos's reputation in Europe back then when you played? And then what other clubs back then were kind of on the same level as Olympiacos that you would, I guess, compare at that time? And then if you could, how has the reputation of Olympiacos changed to the best of your knowledge to now? Has it gotten better, worse? What is your opinion?
I know at the time when we were playing, the most difficult thing that you can do is play against Olympiacos in European Cup games, because it was really impossible to win against them in Waka. Because you played against supporters with 75,000-80,000 people. And at that time, you had a really good team at that time. And it was very difficult to win against them. It was not often that European Cup teams came to Waka and win. So I know that the atmosphere with the supporters at that time, I knew the reputation from Greek supporters. I know the reputation from how difficult it is, how hostile it is to play as a, when you want to play against them. That I know. And then I have seen that, because they didn't show so much Greek football at that time in the rest of Europe. So I only saw them in Champions League, because Olympiacos was in Champions League every time. So every time you saw them playing against teams, and they always won at home, or they never lose at least. So now that's difficult. How it is now, I think that, yeah, of course, now you have the pandemic with COVID-19. It's more easy to play against them because the supports are not there. But, you know, Olympiacos needs the supporters. When Olympiacos has the supporters around him, it's really a 12th man or a 13th man.
Yeah.
Without the supporters, it's much easier to beat them. With the supporters at home and the stadium is full, it's really, really difficult to beat them, because you get a crowd behind you and they are pushing you forwards. And it's very difficult place to go to. Even if you are the biggest team in Europe or in the world, you can't get anything for free, because you're playing against Olympiacos and you're playing against their supporters. And honestly, the first time I played with Olympiacos, the first game that we did, because the preparation is rather long, so the most of the other competition has already started. But my first game was against Lyon in Champions League game. And we won that game with 2-1. We consider a late goal, I think. That's because of that late goal that we were eliminated from. Yeah, that cost us everything. If we shouldn't get that, we should have been qualified for next round in Champions League. And we deserve to be qualified. But anyway, the first time I went out on the field, I get the goosebumps, or what do you call it? Goosebumps.
Yep.
In English. Because the atmosphere was unbelievable. It was 80,000 people in Nuwaka. And I never had such an atmosphere in all my life. I had goosebumps. So you can imagine, if you come there as a visitor and you have to play against them, you say, what is this? you frightened a little bit. Yeah, honestly, you get frightened a little bit. That was the impression that I had. To play against these supporters give you an extra dimension, honestly.
Before we go to the next question, I just want to piggyback off that a little bit. And you talked about that season with Lyon in the Champions League and that bloody last game in France with the disallowed goal, the penalty that wasn't given. And we ended with 9 points. Ended with nine points because we had that strong home record. It was Valencia.
We win three games.
Valencia, Lyon, and Heerenveen, I think it was.
We did one bad game, was it? Away in Heerenveen.
So this is what I want to ask you, because you rightly said that whatever club came to play against us, we had that reputation that you're going to come and play us in Greece, you're going to lose. Nobody can beat us on our home turf. The first team that beat us was Manchester United in the 2001 season. So I was a school kid at the time, and I remember my friends were giving me some stick the next day. Like, you guys, you know, you talked about your undefeated record. It's gone now. And I got some banter from my English friends. But what happened when you guys went to play away? Because, you know, we didn't win an away game until Werder Bremen. I think it was, 2006. I can't remember. Yeah. But
it was late.
What did you, was there something like, what happened when we went away to play? It's like it was.
I honestly don't know. There was something that happened with the team, you know. I don't know. We were focused on the work that we had to do. We still were the same players, but it was completely, we behaved differently on the field. Why we did it, I don't know. I think that we needed the crowd so much behind us. Even if we were playing in away game, we always had a lot of supporters with us. Always. Wherever we were going, we always have a fantastic supporters behind us. Always. But I don't know. I don't know why it was so difficult to produce the same way of playing in away game. I don't know. Even that I thought that we did some good games. I think that the games in Lyon was not bad. We lose 1-0 is for sure.
We didn't deserve to lose that game.
Lyon had a very good side at that time.
Yes,
they did. A very good team. And we played very well over there.
Yeah.
We lose 1-0, but...
I would tell you a story, Per. I think the last season you were there, you were with us, we played at Old Trafford. We lost 4-0. I think Zaelias got a red card just before
that time. But we should have scored before that.
I was at that game and we were losing 4-0. And I think we were about 5,000 or 6,000 Greeks in Old Trafford. I remember after every goal, the United fans, they used to say, "You're not singing anymore." Yeah. They sung that after the fourth goal and we kept going. And I still remember today that the whole stadium just got up and literally started clapping for the fans at 4-0. And we just kept going. But that's a side note for you and the listeners.
But that's what I mean. The supporters, you know, when you get the supporters behind you, it makes a big difference. And also in you played against one of the best teams in the world at that time, Manchester United. They were a great side. Before we get the red card, we had a better chances. We could have scored in Old Trafford. Even that they were better than us, I don't say anything. But we started the game not badly. Not like in Heerenveen, because Heerenveen, we were crap. But here you played against one of the better teams and you get a red card after 30 minutes. That was one of the most difficult 60 minutes afterwards that I ever played, I promise you. I don't think I saw the ball. I didn't feel the ball afterwards, honestly.
So the next question kind of is still along the same lines here.
Yeah.
And this is from OliFan1925 on Twitter. And his question, I would love to know what happened with Bermudez in the locker room politics. How did the team go from beating Bayer Leverkusen 6-2 in the 2002 season to playing
very poorly after that?
Honestly, I don't know, because at the same time we had a great team, and I don't know what happened afterwards. Maybe we got too much confidence because Bayer Leverkusen lost the final the year before, so maybe we thought that, yeah, if they went to the final last year, maybe we are the best teams, and so we were too confident. I don't know, honestly. I have no idea. And I'm still convinced that Bermudez could have done very good work in Olympiacos. For me, it's pity that he didn't get enough chances to do it, like he did in Boca.
Right.
Because he was really a fantastic player, honestly. But, you know, I was not the trainer. I didn't make the team, so
yeah.
I didn't make the selection. So yeah.
Would you ever consider a role, an administrative role or a coaching, scouting role at Olympiacos? Was a question that's been asked.
They have never asked me in that sense. Yeah, I was talking a little bit slowly with it with Karen Burke a couple of years ago. But then I had a role in Anderlecht. So I was been working in Anderlecht for some years that I stopped 1 year ago now. And they haven't asked me anything to have a role or anything in Olympiacos. So I can't answer it, really. But I'm always open for everything. If there is a demand or if they ask me anything, I listen to it and then I will decide afterwards. It's always an honor to work with a team that you have been playing for, because you always have a relation in somehow in that way, instead of working with a team that you don't have been playing for, because I always have a heart for one of the teams that I've been playing for. Of course, I've been playing a long time for Anderlecht, so that means that they have a big heart of me. But I have three fantastic years also in Olympiacos, where I won, I think, 3 titles and 2 cup. So the only thing I lost was 1 cup final. So that's the only thing. So it's not bad in 3 years and win 5 titles.
You know, we haven't had many Scandinavian players since you left. I think it's,
Melberg.
Yeah.
Melberg.
Yeah. Obviously, we remember you. We remember Olaf Melberg, who did really well at the club. Mm. He's managing now, if I'm not mistaken. And most recently, Omar El Abdelawi, right back from Norway, played 6 mm. years for us. But we, other than that, I can't think of many. Jimmy Durmaz. Swedish international also played for us for a little bit. One year, I think.
Yeah,
I wasn't a huge fan, I have to say, but he did okay, and now I think he's still playing in Turkey. Who do you consider kind of hot Swedish football talent at the moment? Who are like maybe some names that you can drop? Obviously, for everybody in the modern game, when you think of Sweden, everybody thinks about Ibra.
Yeah, of course. But you know, you have to try to find the players before they become as big as Ibra. And I know that Olympiacos. I can't say what I'm talking with Karabur, me and what we are talking about, because we're talking about sometimes and. They have been interesting in some of the Swedish players before they went to other teams in Europe. So they are on the market. They are trying to find Swedish players.
There was a left back we were looking at from Sweden, actually. Yes. But I can't remember his name. I'll try and look it up.
Yeah, I can't mention any names because you know, I'm talking in private with Karel Boo.
Sure.
So that's the respect that I have with him and the mutual respect. So what stays between me and him stays with us. So I'm sorry, I can't mention anything.
No, of course we understand that completely. We did have another question. This is from one of our Greek Finnish listeners. His name is SZ at Fetanos on Twitter. And he wanted to know your opinion on Jari Litmanen, the former Finnish captain, national team captain, and also attacking midfielder. What were your opinions on him as a player?
Fantastic player. He was really fantastic. He was not the quickest one, but he was one of the quickest minds in that era, because he was so quick with his head, much quicker than many of the other players. And the career that he did in Ajax was fantastic. He's the best Finnish player in all time. Like the Ibra of Sweden. Serious. He was the same in Finland.
He was a fantastic player. And I think you said it spot on. He wasn't the quickest, but any game you watched when he was on the field, even in the later stages of his career, he would just be in the right place. He was such a clever player. Yeah. And there are players like him are a dying breed, I would say.
Definitely, because his mind is so much quicker than many of the other ones. Because if you could have his head in the way of the speed of some players, then you are one of the best players in the world, definitely. Because he had it all. And he has a good technique also, good controls. But the imagine and the way of playing and things like that, and the mindset that he had. And he scored a lot of goals and gave him many assists also. So fantastic player.
He was also one of those players that in today's game, you wouldn't know where to put him. It's like a second striker, but can play striker, can play number 10, could play on the wing. I don't know. He's one of those players that you wouldn't know where to put him.
I think that maybe, is that what I'm saying? Our roles, what we had at that time, is clearly a role that starts to disappear a little bit. It is like that. It's pity, but that's the way the football has advanced in today's football. And maybe in 5 years or in 10 years, maybe that position will come back, because in the 50s and the 60s you were playing a different way of football, and then they started to come at 4-4-4, 4-4-2. And then they started 3-5-2 and 4-3-3, and now you play 3-4-3. And you know, the systems are changing all the time. So the way of playing is going to completely change in 5 years' time. Then you're going to find a system that's completely different than today's football. I think so, because it's changing all the time.
Right, Per. I wanted to ask you when it came to the team itself. We always get a lot of questions from the listeners when we have former players on. They always want to know, did Olympiacos feel like a team or a family? Because you have players and managers that come in, or owners even, and they want to make it a family. Some treat it as just a team. What did you feel like during your 3 years there? Did Olympiacos feel like a team, or was it a family to you? And you can be completely honest. This is
But it you know, if it feels like a family, a football club, it's a team,
right?
It is a team, because a family is somebody that you have a relationship with outside football.
Right.
Once the training is finished, you have some of your friends, but you don't see them too much outside of the way when you're working together with them. That doesn't mean that you don't have a respect and understanding with them. That's completely different. But it's a difference between a family and a team.
Yes.
So Olympiacos, or all the other football teams that I've been playing was a team. Even that we had a good understanding together with each other, we had a good, fantastic relationship together. But we were a team, a very good team.
I think we're coming to an end. I have maybe one or two more questions. Best memory at Olympiacos, worst memory at Olympiacos?
best. I think honestly, I know this. The worst was when I was playing like shit. That's I was so ashamed of myself at that time because I was wondering, how can you play so bad? First of all, I was really ashamed of a certain way. After I started very well in Olympiacos the first couple of months, and then I was playing so bad for I think nearly a year. I was playing shit. I was ashamed of myself, but I was very proud of myself also because I was signing with Anderlecht to come back to Anderlecht in January or when I had still 6 months to play in Olympiacos. I signed because they didn't propose a new contract with me. So I said, I start again at age, okay. Then I go back to Anderlecht because they asked me a contract. And I think that many of the people in Greece or whatever thought that, yeah, now I have signed a new contract, he will let go. He will not care anything about us. But I'm very proud of the way that I reacted and I played even better the last 6 months of the contract when I even had signed a contract with a new team and I finished on a high level. And at that time, I think that I got the respect from many people in Greece because of how I produced my 6 last months and that we become champion for the 7th time or 8th time in a row champion and we break all the records that we have done before. So that was the proudest moment that I had in Greece, honestly.
I actually didn't remember that. I didn't remember that you'd signed a pre-contract, no. But like you said, I mean, you said you spent 3 years at the club and 1.5 of it, you said wasn't great. And the rest of it was fantastic, but definitely I remember your last 6 months quite well. Like you were playing fantastic football and definitely, like, you know, seeing you leave, it was sad for all the fans, I think.
For me as well.
Absolutely. Like, I think all the fans had a huge amount of respect for you. And I can't remember if it was that season when they had the presentation of the cup in Piraeus in the port and you came out with the camcorder.
Yeah, that was when we were champion. You know, there was 100,000 people or something was over there. And that was one of the, you know, I really felt respected, you know, by the supporters. And that felt really, really well. I was really proud of myself that, okay, you did a fantastic job. The people respect you. You have won titles, but mostly the people respect you. And that for me was the biggest win because after 1.5 years, the first 1.5 years, you know, I was criticized and rightly so. I don't say anything because I was playing bad. And I'm the first one to say it. I was understand that the people ask, why is he playing with us? Why did I buy him? He's crap. But the way that I was working the last 18 months, that I won them back and that I was so respectful, that was the biggest success that I had. One of the biggest success that I had in my career, really. Honestly, because I was working very hard to come back.
Honestly. That's amazing, man. I have one more question before I hand over to Ari and thank you so much for spending so much time with us. If there's one game you would play again.
The Super League game, Panathinaikos.
Okay. So you'd like to, okay. So it's not a match that you necessarily lost and would like to play again, but you'd like to play that one again.
Yeah.
It was so, so fantastic with everything. Excellent. Build up to the game and the atmosphere, we win 3-0 and I had a good game also. So that was, it was fantastic.
That's excellent.
We were really on the moon and it was nice.
That's excellent. I don't know if you, like in Greece, that's still a controversial game. You know, the opposite. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Like if you talk to any Panathinaikos fan, you know, they've talked to Karagounis, for example, and, you know, Karagounis said it's like impossible to play. They didn't have a warm up when they came out.
Yeah.
Because the police couldn't guarantee their safety is what's being said. And I mean, anyway, it was a crazy game. It was hostile. And probably was a bit too much, I can understand, but anyway, it was interesting that you know your response was thinking in a positive game. So, oh, I'd love to play that game again, you know. And normally you ask that question and somebody thinks that game we lost, you know, in Lyon, or that game in Deportivo, 2-1 up and then conceding that damn goal in the last minute. But no, super interesting that you went for
that, because that's a good memory. And then, you know, the feeling that you had before, the build-up, the importance of the game and things like that, it was a special game. And games like that, you always want to play them again because you had a good feeling before the game, during the game, and after the game. So if those games, you always want to play again. Games that you lose, you try to erase them, so you didn't have that kind of feeling. So this game, Panathinaikos game in Rizupoli, they're still talking, like you were saying just now, that they're still talking about them. And I still remember what you can't remember all the games that you played,
of course,
but this game, and like we're talking before about the Ike game 4-3 in Waka, those are the games that you still remember, and those are the games that you still want to play again, because those are something that affect your way of thinking and the way of the supporters, how they were thinking about those games, and those games you still want to play.
No, yeah, it's very refreshing to hear, and it's just it's very much you take a very positive outlook on all of this, and it's very refreshing to have somebody that has that outlook on their time and their career as a player. Now, I had two questions for you before we begin to wrap things up. We have a fair number of young listeners, some that are part of the Olympiacos academies here in the United States that listen, and we always like to have some questions that kind of will help guide them in their future careers if they seek to pursue college or professional careers. And the first question I had for you was, when you were, let's say, in poor form, in the beginning of your time at Olympiacos, when you said you weren't playing well, what were things that you did to help get out of that? What were things that really helped you turn from being in poor form and having a bad go of it to then becoming, you know, winning the fans back and becoming a great, you know, one of the best number 10s to play for us? What did you do? What work did you do off the field? How did you get your mindset correct so that you could get out of that rut?
I train extra. I always train extra. Do the basic things that stay longer on trainings, shoot more free kicks, give more passes. That's when you need friends. You stay with Carabou extra. You stay with Condis extra. You stay with C. Elias extra. You put a goalkeeper. You start shooting. You start spending more and more times on the field, that you need the basic things, that the confidence come back in the basic things that you need on the field. And after a while, the mindset in your head get those things and you start to get the confidence back. I train extra. That's what I was doing. It sounds maybe easy, but you spend hours and hours to train extra. I'm not the guy who's going to do more body weight, standing in the gym or something. No, I was training extra with football because that was my game. More passing, controls, shoots, free kicks, and things like that to get the basic back, to get the confidence back. Having fun on the field. You know, if you don't have fun on the football field, you can never produce a good spectator on the field. I was starting to enjoy it more and more. Even if I was playing bad, I tried to enjoy it more and more to say, okay, Pep, we go on it tomorrow again and try to be better. And after a while, it becomes better. So that works for me. I don't say it will work for everyone, but for me it helped, and I become better of it. I learn a lot from it.
So. Now, the second question I had for you is, and this is more general, what advice would you give to some these younger listeners, the ones that have these aspirations, maybe even professional aspirations? What advice would you give to them? Maybe things that you did that you think really helped push your career, things that you did that you believe may have really helped when you initially got first noticed by Anderlecht. What advice do you have for them if they really want to be a professional football player? What would you tell yourself if you could go back in time and talk to yourself as a young footballer before you went to Anderlecht? What would you tell yourself?
The most important is that you always have to have fun on the field, have an enormous pleasure, and always try to realize your goals, what you put up for yourself. You know, work hard. Always try to do your best. You know, it's not because you do one bad game or two bad games that you're useless. Everyone comes in that, except if you're Messi or Ronaldo or something. They don't come in the way that we others, normal persons, come in. You're always coming bad, but always believe in yourself. Have fun on the field and make the best of it. And always do the best that you can, that you don't say once when you stop your career and say, why didn't I do that? Why didn't I do that better or anything? That you don't have any regrets one time your career is stopping. Because having regrets afterwards, you will never be able of changing it. So always play your career like this, the last thing that you can do, because having regrets is the worst thing you can have. And I have definitely no regrets, because I did some bad games and I did some good games, and I never regret it afterwards. My decisions that I took coming to Olympiacos, I never regret it for one time. And I will always do the same choices that I did. And I'm very proud of it. So have fun, enjoy it, and never regret the choices that you do, because that's a part of your life. And I don't say that I am right or wrong, but that worked for me, and I hope it will work for somebody else. So enjoy it, have fun. If you don't have fun, it will be difficult to produce a good career, I think. But the difference is in today's football, in our football, is that is so much more money in today's football than it was in our time. So I can understand it. It's been more difficult maybe today to have so much fun that we had. I think so.
Yeah, and it's really important, everything you said, because there are a lot of similarities between what you said, what Matt Derbyshire said, and what Yannakopoulos said. When you were talking about getting out of your, you know, out of your rut or your let's say your bad phase of play, what you said, what Yannakopoulos said, and what Matt Derbyshire said, all the same thing. You have to put in the work. Stelio called it sacrifice. You know, you could have just ended training and gone home and, you know, relaxed, but you put the time in, you wanted to get better, and you put the extra time in. It's the same thing that Matt Derbyshire said. It's the same thing that Yannakopoulos said. So not just for the young listeners, but for all the listeners, if you want to have that success, you have to be willing to put the time in. You have to be willing to put the extra work in. And the second part is equally as important, if not more so. You have to love what you do.
Yeah.
Stelio said the same thing. Matt Derbyshire said the same thing. He talked about how he's loving his football. And if you don't love what you do, it's going to be very difficult for you to want to keep, you're not going to want to put the extra work in. When you love the game, when you love to play, when you love whatever it is that your work is, you want to do more with it. So if you don't love the game, you don't love playing it, it's a very difficult thing for you to succeed at. That's just the nature of it. That's very insightful. And I'm hoping that all the younger listeners, well, all the listeners in general, are beginning to see some of these similarities that all of the former players like yourself have said that were kind of keys to their success, because we have maybe some different ways of putting it, but a lot of it comes down to those same two things, that hard work or sacrifice and the passion, the enjoyment of the game. All of that is, both of those are very important if you want to ever even hope to become a professional footballer.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's so much sacrifice. You know, when I was growing up, you know, my mindset when I was young, and I'm talking young when I was 15, 16, 17, you know, I did a lot of sacrifice when the other ones was going out on discotheques and out drinking or having fun. What were I doing? I was training. I was training because I want to become a professional footballer. So I did a lot of sacrifice. The funny things that the mostly of the young people are doing, I couldn't do because I was planning my career. But I didn't regret it afterwards because I gain it on having fun on the field. That was my fun. So I would never regret the sacrifice that I was doing to have my career. I could do it over and over again because the funniest thing that I could ever have was playing football. And if I could do it today when I'm 50, play football, I should sign it today again, and I would love it to be out on the football field to play a football game again, without any doubt. I could pay so much to do it again, because that's the best thing there is, playing football. Honestly, there's nothing who is more fun than that. Not for me, anyway.
Man, it's been such a joy talking to you today.
My pleasure.
We could continue for a long time, I feel.
Absolutely.
But we'll let you get back to your family, get your rest. It's getting late. Truly, it's been a fantastic discussion with you. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. I think for us as Gate 7 International Podcast, and for all the listeners, I think it's crystal clear that not only were you a model professional footballer, but just as a person, and from other discussions we've had with former footballers and with Stelio in particular, you know, everybody says like Per's a great guy, and thank you so much, Per. Like if there's anything that, you know, a message that you'd like to send to the listeners, to the fans, anything that you would like to promote via the podcast, like now's your opportunity.
I don't know what else I can say. You know, I had a fantastic 3 years in Olympiacos, and you know, I made so many good friends, and honestly we even today when I go on vacation in Greece, you know, we still feel at home, because I still, What I like so much about it is that 3 years meant so much, not only for me, but also for my family. And it meant so much for the people. And I love it. Olympiacos is one of my teams that I love so much, with Anderlecht. Anderlecht and Olympiacos is my two teams that I love so much, and that I always would look backwards with so much pleasure and love. And I love to be back one day when it's possible to come back after this pandemic that we are living in. I would love to come back to Karifkaki and watch a game again. I would love it. I hope to be back there, and I would love to see you guys in Greece and to enjoy one good football game.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Could have that a would be epic. Hang out. That would be fantastic. We would love that.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love it too.
And our younger co-hosts, I'm sure they would love to hear your words of wisdom as well. They're going to hear it on recording. I wish they were born a little bit earlier so they could have witnessed your time at Olympiacos as well, or at least be, because they were probably what, 8 years old, maybe seven, eight years old, probably not too aware of themselves back then. But I know they would have loved it. I know that they would have loved you as a player as well. And hopefully we can all travel soon. This will be done. The vaccines will be out and this will go away and we can all go back, travel. It'll be a lot easier. That would be a wonderful, wonderful time. Well, thank you again, Per, so much for joining us. It was an honor talking to you. You're a legend. And it was really wonderful to have you talk on the podcast and give us a lot of insight in your time, as well as some insight for the younger listeners. I really think they're going to appreciate all of that.
My pleasure. I enjoy it. You are two great guys. I had so much fun. I had so much fun, honestly.
Thanks a lot, man.
Talking about football. So.
We've been blessed as fans to have seen some amazing players play for the club, and not just my generation, Irish generation, the younger guys that you didn't get to meet today, that didn't get a chance to see you, but you're up there. You're up there with the greats that have played for the team, whether it's a Rivaldo or a Giovanni or a whoever, like Kadebe. For me, you're top, man. And I really genuinely enjoyed talking with you. Take care, man.
Good luck. Bye-bye.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.